This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In 2003, researchers reported that having a certain genetic mutation put some women at more than an 80% risk for developing breast cancer in their lifetime. That study, called the New York Breast Cancer Study, sent many American Jewish women of Eastern European descent, sent them to genetic counselors to see if they carried the dreaded BRCA1 and 2 mutations, and some of them chose to have mastectomies in advance of any potential cancers. But now some scientists are calling that study flawed, and in a letter published this week in the journal Science, a group of researchers alleges that the New York Breast Cancer Study greatly overestimated the risk of cancer associated with having the mutations. So short of getting a PhD in statistics, how can women with or without the mutation sort out the conflicting reports about breast cancer genes and risk? Joining me now to talk about it is Marisa Weiss, an oncologist and the president and founder of BreastCancer.org. She is also the author of Living Beyond Breast Cancer. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Weiss.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, there is no controversy about the relationship between the genetic mutations and breast cancer, right? That there is that link.
That is definitely true. You know, 85% of women who have breast cancer have no family history, but about 1 in 10 women who develops breast cancer does have a gene that runs in the family that probably explains why they're having breast cancer. So this particular controversy is about those women who probably have an inherited form of breast cancer. And what they're saying is that if you or someone in your family has inherited breast cancer gene or breast cancer gene 2, 1 or 2, then during the course of your lifetime, you're at real high risk for developing breast cancer, and you're also at increased risk for developing ovarian cancer. And where the controversy is the level of risk, the magnitude of risk. If someone has one of these genes, she is at high risk for developing breast cancer. And the question is, how high is her risk? Is it 50%, a 50% chance of getting breast cancer over her lifetime, or is it 80% and a little bit or a little bit more? And that's where the controversy is. The science people are saying, you know what, it's not as high as 80% for all women who have this gene. There's a range there, and there are a lot of things that can impact on a particular woman's risk depending on a lot of stuff, like how the breast cancer gene has behaved in that family. There are some families that have the gene, but for some reason their risk of breast cancer seems to be low. And there are other families where they have the gene tends to be more angry and aggressive, and there's a much higher risk of breast cancer in that particular family. And the scientists are trying to explain why this gene may behave differently in different families. As a doctor, I'm a physician who takes care of women with breast cancer and president of BreastCancer.org, but I'm also from an Ashkenazi Jewish family, and my family does have the breast cancer gene as well, which is something I only found out once I was in the field. And we struggle to give a individual woman the best advice we can. What does this breast cancer family history mean for her? Is she someone who would benefit from seeking advice from a genetics counselor so she can understand the meaning of the family history and maybe be tested for the breast cancer gene? And if she does have proved to have the breast cancer gene, what are the things that she can do to help herself reduce her risk? And after she does those things, and while she's doing those things, what's the best way to follow her over time, not just with respect to her breast cancer risk, but also with respect to her risk of ovarian cancer and her general health, you know, and also attending to her peace of mind, because for women who have the breast cancer gene abnormality, our goal as her physician is to say, okay, let's help manage your risk of your high risk of breast and ovarian cancer, but let's also help you live with this predisposition so that you can enjoy your life and not have this sort of take over.
Well, does this number 50%, which is sort of like a coin toss, which is much different than 80%, does that influence your thinking of how you would advise your patients?
Well, it does have an impact. I mean, there is a significant difference between 50 and 85%, but both numbers are very high. Mm-hmm. And even if a woman's is from a family with a lot of breast and ovarian cancer, it may be that the women in that family do very well over the course of their lifetime, and they may be diagnosed with breast cancer, but each time they have it, it seems to be treatable, and they move on. So for each individual woman, we have to make the best customized solution for how to reduce her risk. I can just tell you that in my own family, there are many women in our own family, and we share so many different tastes, and we think a lot of the same way, and we laugh in a lot of the same ways. But when it came to decisions about our medical care mm-hmm. and what we would do to reduce her risk, how far we would go, medication only, prophylactic surgery, there was a lot of variation from one individual to another, because there's only one of each woman that is out there. Every woman is unique and different, and how she makes decisions and how she looks at her risk and how she moves through her life is going to be very unique to her.
Mm-hmm. And as you said before, this is only affecting 10% of women in the general population.
No, what this is that about 1 out of 10 women who gets breast cancer has it running through the family, mm-hmm. you know, where there's a gene abnormality that passes from one generation to the other that puts a person at a high risk for breast cancer, and in some situations also a high risk for ovarian cancer.
Mm-hmm. So you see this news as just something else to throw into the large mix of possibilities when someone comes and asks you about this.
Right. Well, there are a lot of reasons why the risk may vary between 50% and 80%, and that's just how you collect information. Is each person in the family, those people with breast cancer, those without breast cancer, men as well as women, are they all coming into the clinic and giving blood samples and being tested? Are all deceased family members who are out there? Is there tissue available to test to see if they had the gene abnormality? And because there are a lot of practical limitations, and also because women at high risk for women who have a lot of breast cancer in the family tend to be more motivated to come in and give a blood sample relative to women who may have the gene in their family but haven't been personally affected by it. Because there's a difference in motivation between those groups, that can explain some of the difference
yeah.
in the range between 50 yeah. and 80%. So there's a lot of complicated factors that explain why that range is there. But the point is that if you are listening out there and you are somebody who has a significant family history of breast cancer occurring early in young women, breast cancer affecting not just one breast but maybe another breast, the other breast, and let's say there's also ovarian cancer in there, and maybe you're of Ashkenazi Jewish background, then you're somebody who should talk to your doctor about genetic counseling, which involves putting this information on a piece of paper, filling out like a family tree, getting the big picture there on paper, and then deciding whether or not the pattern of cancer in your family is significant or if it's not significant. And if it's significant, they might recommend getting a blood test to see if there's a breast cancer gene in your family that they know how to identify. Mm-hmm. And if that turns out to be the case, then you want to work with, doctors that specialize in breast cancer who can help you understand the most effective way for you to reduce your risk and how to follow you over time, and also how to give you peace of mind and help you sort of feel optimistic and about your future and plan for a long life, hopefully.
There are some women who will choose to have the mastectomy.
That's right. Well, for any woman who is considering her options for reducing her risk, there are a number of things. There are lifestyle changes. She can not smoke, and she can minimize her alcohol intake. She can exercise regularly. She can try to keep her weight close to ideal body weight. There's also things you can do with medicines. There's a medication called tamoxifen that can help reduce the risk of breast cancer in women who are at high risk. And there's also, as you mentioned, surgical options that are more, more aggressive, that can help you reduce your risk further. You can remove the breasts prophylactically. That reduces the risk by about 90%, but it does not eliminate the risk entirely. If you're a premenopausal woman, you can also have your ovaries removed, and this helps reduce the risk of breast cancer by about 50%, and also reduces the risk of ever getting ovarian cancer by about 80%. So There are a lot of things that women can do, and how she makes these decisions is unique to each individual. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these decisions about risk reduction are not something that has to be done, you know, instantly, right away, urgently. That you can take the time that you need to make the right choices. For example, some women may decide to, you know, change their lifestyle, be followed very carefully with high-quality MRI scanning, mammography, and ultrasound. And then a few years later, when they're finished having babies and raising, you know, and having their family, they may at that time, you know, reconsider the possibility of having their ovaries removed. And so, you know, it's a careful conversation that each woman needs to have with her doctor to come up with a plan that works for each individual. And again, that plan might change over time, and that's why you go back to your doctor on a regular basis, is to say, let's talk about this again. Let's revisit this issue. Guess what? I got married. Guess what? I didn't think I want to have kids. Now I do. I'm going to do that sooner than later. And then we say, okay, great, good. That's so exciting. Let's see you again and you know, next time, and we'll talk about it some more. So that's it's an ongoing conversation that a woman has to have with her doctor, anybody who's facing a strong family history of breast cancer, as well as having a known breast cancer gene abnormality.
Mm. So don't try to anticipate in advance from listening to the news reports what you should be doing.
Right, but I'd also say that the pace of medical discovery is really fast now, that there's a lot of new information coming out about breast cancer genetics, as well as protein, you know, genetics and proteins that are important. At breastcancer.org, you know, we try to cover all the new medical advances regularly, so that women get the benefit of the best new information. And particularly when there's confusion or new information, you want to say, you know, how does this new information apply to me? That's what we try to do.
All right. We'll send them over to your website at breastcancer.org. I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dr. Weiss. Dr. Marisa Weiss, an oncologist and president and founder of breastcancer.org. Her book is Living Beyond Breast Cancer, published by Random House. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the genes and AIDS. So stay with us. We'll be right back.